Grace, the Amy Santiago of Royal Bloggers.
And I'm Jessica, the Dorothy Sporanath of Royal Bloggers.
And we'd like to welcome you to On Air, the podcast where two cynical Brits discuss the latest royal news and the truth behind the stories. Hello and welcome to the On Air podcast. We are going to do part two of our anniversary special, because we were very much expecting fewer questions, and then we got so many, and obviously we can talk a lot for all about any question. We have a special 101st episode special episode, as all classic podcasts do.
I'm just going to normalize the 101st being a milestone now.
Yeah. Celebration of a new beginning. Anyway, we have got quite a few more questions to get through. So we have got our wills ready. We've got our questions ready.
Do you want to spin the wheel first, or shall I?
I shall spin the wheel. Ooh, what's it going to be? It is number 42. Do you think bringing in additional non-working royals as working royals is a good idea? If so, who would you pick?
Just ease us in with a nice, simple one to start off with. I assumed this was for the British royal family, by the way, should I say, as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so did I. My answer is no. I don't think we should have additional working royals, because the public does not understand how the whole working royal, non-working royal thing it works. And I think people forget the reason people like Beatrice and Eugenie are so fundamentally not working royals is because there was such a kerfuffle over them having taxpayer-funded security that, like, the idea of them also then doing work for the royal family would cause... It would be a PR disaster. I think the only way around it would be if you took someone like Louise or James, who aren't proper adults yet, then introduced them into being working royals. I don't think they needed it, but I wouldn't be against Louise and James becoming working royals if they decided they needed some, because they've not lived half of their life without it. And also the public don't have many preconceived notions of them.
It's very much a problem that only really exists amongst people who are royal watchers. They will be fine, because nobody in the general public actually has any idea how often these people do or don't work. There's, again, like a perception that, oh, well, Beatrice and Eugenie, I really like them, so they should get to do it. But I remember when the government asked them to do that tour to Germany.
I've forgotten about that.
It was in 2013. They went to Germany, and it was part of the government's tourism campaign. So they weren't going as working royals, but they were going at the government's order, I guess. And it was slated. And it's a shame, because it's nothing to do with... This is what I want to say. It's like nothing to do with Beatrice and Eugenie. I think they're very nice, but they have the stain of being Andrew's daughter and Fergie's daughters. I don't think it's needed, and I don't think that it would work practically. However, if I have to pick somebody, as you say, I would probably pick Louise. If I could just pick people based on who I liked and who I thought would do the job well, I would pick Zara.
Yeah, I think if you could pick anyone with no sort of thoughts about it, I would pick Zara in a second. I'd also pick Tim.
Oh, yes. Oh, Tim should be, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, because even if he didn't change his plans at all, it would, like, double the number of engagements.
Yeah.
Because he does everything and does near enough, so might as well just shove him in.
I think it's quite dodgy that he's not considered a working royal, but that's a conversation for another day.
Yeah, Tim be a working royal campaign starts right now.
Absolutely, yes. Okay, so time for the next question. I will spin the wheel. Oh, I cannot tell you the tension that was involved in that moment. It went right over the line just at the last second. Number six, what do you like most about royal watching, and what do you like the least?
Ooh, that's a good question. That's a
good question, isn't it? I think the thing I like most is that they're in real life, if you say to somebody that you like following the royals or anything like that, they immediately assume that you are some sort of flag-waving nationalist conservative. They make a lot of assumptions about you. And so I don't necessarily feel like I can say to somebody that I'm interested in royals without having to do like a whole disclaimer of like, but it doesn't mean that I'm a supporter of this, and this is actually why I really like the royals, and it all goes back to my childhood, and and it's quite hard to hide something that is that you find so fascinating, and then you know so much about, and that you find you would love to talk to people about. I find that quite difficult. I think that one of the things I like the most about about royal watching is that for me it's about, I don't royal watch on my own, I guess. I consider it like a group activity. It's something that I do on a blog or on my Instagram, and I like that I have this place where I can be open about something that interests me, and nobody's gonna make a, people make assumptions about me, but then don't make assumptions about me because I'm a royal watcher.
Like you, I've got, my friends are very left wing, and and like it's even like when you're at work and someone will be like, oh, do you know about the royals? And I can't be like, yeah, I do actually. I'm like, I've heard of them. It's a thing I know more about than anything else in life. Like it's I know it. And it's even like, I remember someone asked me once, like, what's the one thing you probably know the most about? And I was like, I have to think of something else to say because I can't be like, well, actually. I know exactly what it is. It's Kate. I can't be like, so it's nice for there to be a place where you don't have to like hide that.
And then I think in terms of like why I'm interested in it in the first place, if we think of royal watching as not like an activity thing, I think it's because it combines so many of the things that I find really interesting. So it's got history, it's got power, it's got politics, it's got fashion, as well as, some of the most like fun and enjoyable things that are not quite as heavy, like rules, hierarchies. And which I love. I love a rule. I love a procedure. I love things to be really clear. And I love like it, it's something that you can do a lot of researching about. So you can be somebody who just posts pictures because you like this person. But if you want to, you can go and read, it's doing this podcast and writing about royals. I've read so many constitutions, and I've learned about different countries and their cultures and histories. And so there's so much scope and opportunity to kind of delve into different topics and learn about more than just the individual royals.
Yeah, I was definitely going to say, like, the fact I've learned so much and I still do learn so much. Like, I always want a project. Like, I always want to make like a PowerPoint or like a big poster about something. And I don't make posters or PowerPoints about things, but I can find out the information that would then go onto the poster. And, I know so much about, like Britain, the British political system, which I thought I knew everything about before. And I didn't because I knew it only in terms of like Parliament. And then I've learned so much about other countries, whether that's from watching sort of other royal families in their countries and learning, about what the people in the country are like and learning about sort of the customs and the cultures and how their political systems work. Or even when royals go on tour, like I always think about when William and Kate went to Pakistan. And I had a very sort of westernized view of Pakistan as like a war-torn, barren land. And it was this beautiful, culturally fulfilled country. And I was like, I would never have known that. Or like Bhutan, I didn't even know that country existed. It's just like such an enjoyable hobby because it's not like a sport where you're dependent really on like, is your team going to win or lose? Or like, even if the current royals all stopped immediately, there's hundreds of years of history. So there's so much. I'm never going to do it all.
There's just something, not to get into a therapy session, but there's something quite nice psychologically about having an environment where I'm like, I know this, and I'm confident, and I can assert myself because I know it, and I know that I know it better than a lot of other people do. So I'm being uncharacteristically positive. I think the main reason is I'm trying to avoid my least favorite area is because I already mentioned it last week, the fact that a lot of people who follow royals don't know what royals are.
Yeah, I think for me, the thing that I get the most frustrated with, and I'm sure I do it myself sometimes, is people who are not from my country speaking over people from that country. So I try really hard not to do it for other royal families, you know, and I try to very much be factual when I speak about them. But because, you know, the British royal family are definitely the kind of biggest royal family in royal watching, they're the ones most people know about, there's a lot of people who will say, who just say things very confidently. And I'm sure, you know, they believe it because that's what they've heard in their friends or that's what they've seen online and they know British people online. And they'll say something like, oh, yeah, the British public are so annoyed that William's this or Sophie's really sort of messed up here, or this royal's fumbled the bag and he should have done this instead. And I'm like, no one has even heard this has happened. This is not even a thing in Britain. You know, I don't mind if people, if you think that, if you think that, if you think the royal has messed up and, or, you know, this should have happened instead, because everyone can have their opinion. But saying so confidently that, like, this is a big issue because the taxpaying British public think that this is what really frustrates me because. You know, it's one of those things where, like, there are issues the taxpaying British public can come up with. And then when you throw these kind of other things at them, it sort of diminishes the actual issues the British public might have with the royals. And I think, you know, I don't have, I will happily say, I don't really know the public opinion towards their sort of political system in many other countries. Like, I know bits from what I've seen on the internet, but I'm by no means an expert. And even if I spent years researching, I wouldn't be an expert. So I think it's just one of those things where I want to hear people's opinions, but when they're talking about what kind of what that means, they tend not to take into account the actual people from that country. And it's not just Britain; they do it with, people do it with other countries as well. But I think Britain's definitely the biggest.
I face this quite a lot because I am a British person whose primary interest is the Swedish royal family. You'll say something like this of, you know, oh, well, I'm a British person and I don't know any British people who feel strongly about this situation that you're making a big deal out of. And then people are like, oh, well, it's just my opinion. Am I not allowed to have opinion? And it's like, no, you are allowed to have an opinion, but you also just have to remember that they are representatives of a specific nation. And so that nation's views should come first. So I can have an opinion, but I can also then say, but I also know it doesn't matter and I'm not going to push it. I'm not going to talk about it all the time.
Right, spinning. Where are we going to end up today? It's question 21. Favorite monarchy slash second favorite royal family to follow and why?
So we had two questions. One person said, what's your favorite monarchy? And then somebody else knew what our favorite monarchies were, so it was like, what's your second favorite?
Throwing a spanner in the works. My favorite royal family is not my favorite royal family to follow because my favorite royal family is the Norwegian royal family. I
Interesting.
love the Norwegian. There's no one in the Norwegian royal family I particularly dislike. I enjoy watching their sort of engagements. Like when they're working, I do go out of my way to watch it. Whereas obviously the one I follow the most is, but even the one I follow the most is the British royal family. But that's very narrowed in really on Charles, Camilla, William and Kate. Like I don't follow anyone else particularly. I don't follow Anne. I don't follow the Edinburghs. Or the Gloucesters or the Kents or anyone. So my favourite royal family is definitely the Norwegians. But the one that I would follow the most is the core four in the Brits.
That is an interesting answer. Yeah, you did throw a spanner in the works.
I know.
Well, my favorite royal family is the Swedish royal family. And then my second favorite is also Norway, actually. And I think it is that because that question was your second favorite to watch. Like I was debating this actually because like I really love watching the Thai royal family. I don't like them as people. I think that they're terrible, but I also find them fascinating. And then also like I really like the royal family of Monaco, but I find watching them quite difficult because everybody because of the whole like horrible narrative around Charlene. So it's quite an interesting question of like how you want to interpret it as, you know, is it the one that you like the best or the one that you enjoy the process? But I think Norway fits both. I like them as royals and I also enjoy watching them because there's no toxic Norwegian royal family fans that I know of.
Yeah, I think when I watch the British Royals, I predominant not only do I just watch the main four, I predominantly watch them like in a vacuum.
Yeah.
There are a few people that I look out at and see like what they're doing, but because there are so many people who have completely sort of toxic views and differing opinions to me, I don't seek them out. Like I don't want to hide away from people with different opinions from me, but people whose opinions I don't think are right because they're not based in fact. I don't sort of search them out, and I think there's so I follow, so few people. It's not many people that I follow are British sort of royal family blogs, whereas I would definitely say I follow more people who are like Spanish. I follow a lot of Spanish royal family blogs, so maybe they're my ones that I actually watch probably come second in terms of like the ones I enjoy watching because it brings me peace. I do watch the Spanish royal families a lot.
Okay, next question. Spin the wheel. I should have worked on my wheel sounds in between.
Yeah, the week of practice.
Okay, it is number 20. Most underrated and overrated royals right now. And we actually had three people who voted for this in some way or another. And I think this is another one that, we were talking last week about something and I can't remember what it was. Oh, most unpopular opinion. And I think this is another one that's difficult because I feel like a lot of royals will evoke very strong opinions one way or another. In the end, I picked one of each. And I actually went with the most underrated as being Crown Prince Haakon.
Okay.
Because I don't know anyone who is a Haakon blogger. Like even Frederick gets people who are really, really interested in Frederick. Because his father's been ill quite a lot, Haakon has really stepped up to do the job of being a monarch a lot. And he has handled a lot of really difficult situations very, very well, like the Martha Louise thing. We know that he was actually instrumental in a lot of these decisions. It wasn't just he was invited along and the king made the decision. Like he was instrumental in kind of shaping how the family responded. And so, a lot of the times when we talk about the positive parts of the Norwegian royal family, we say, like, oh, because King Harald is great. And I think that's true. But I also think that we don't always recognize that Haakon is a really key part of making all the things that we like about the Norwegian royal family. And I think he's viewed as also being a bit bland by some people. Like even people who have positive views of him might think he's a bit bland. But I always remember when he did a speech at Georgetown, which he went to university there and he went back and did a speech for the students. And he was like taking off he took off his tie and he talked about how he used to be a EDM DJ. And it was the funniest thing. And like he's got a really great sense of humor. So I feel like even, I think not he doesn't get enough praise for how well prepared he is to do the future job, how crucial he is to the Norwegian monarchy, and how actually he's really quite funny and interesting.
I think that's a really good choice because, yeah, I like Haakon, but I wouldn't say like I'm a Haakon stan, and I definitely don't think about him very much in general. My underrated royal is Queen Matilda of Belgium. I could have gone for the entire Belgian royal family. There aren't loads and loads and loads of like Belgian royal family stan accounts out there. But I really like the Belgian royal family. But of the two of them, I think oddly, for one, like the king gets slightly more attention, and Elizabeth gets more attention because Elizabeth's, the young upcoming head of the next generation of royals, and the king is a bit odd. He's a bit quirky. People kind of watch him. They're aware of the things he's doing. Whereas Mathilde is very kind of flies under the radar, but she has raised four who appear to be very well sort of rounded children. She has been queen for a really long time. She's not really done anything controversial particularly. And then Belgium are often the ones where you get to, like during COVID, they were leading the way in the kind of COVID response. And then with the Ukrainian, when Russia invaded Ukraine, they were leading the way. And there's never, it's always like, well, well done, King Philippe. Not like, well done, Matilde. And I think she is definitely the most underrated.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout as well. I did think about the Belgian royal family, but yeah, I think that's a good option.
Overrated royals.
Most overrated royals. Yes, so I ended up going for Queen Sophia of Spain.
Oh, that is a very good choice.
See how much you're scared to say anything. Queen Sophia is viewed in a like similar way to like Princess Diana in Spain, not quite as intense, I wouldn't say, but she's the angel queen who has suffered and sacrificed because of her terrible husband. And is just perfect and wonderful and has never done anything wrong. And Letizia in particular is always compared to Sophia and it's always negatively like Letizia is worthless. I mean, I'm not a massive fan of Sophia anyway for reasons that we've talked about in previous episodes. But I don't see anything that is over and above anyone else that means that she deserves this like sanctification.
Well, my most overrated royal is the Duchess of Edinburgh. No,
One.
sorry.
What a shocker.
But I have genuine reasons for this. Now, there's a narrative that has arrived about Sophie at a notable time that I will come to later in my story, which is that she is incredibly hardworking and an asset to the royal family, and also is everyone's best friend and has saved the day. Sophie had fans before, but Sophie's Saint Sophie narrative took off when people realised that Kate and Meghan weren't going to be best friends. And I think people for years wanted there to be like a relationship between Kate and her future sister-in-law, like there is between like Martha and Louise and Meta and Marit, like this kind of, or even between Kate and Pippa, like these real close bonds, like best friends. Very quickly realised that was not going to happen. So they searched around for like the next best option, and we have seen pictures of, you know, Kate and Sophie smiling at each other and laughing with each other. And one time they visited each other. So it was really easy to paint them as best friends forever. But because Sophie had never done anything amazing, they had to invent a Saint Sophie. I don't really have any opinions on the actual real Sophie. She just is there and I don't like her. But the Sophie people talk about is I so overrated.
The thing that bothers me, I mean, I don't have an opinion really about Sophie one way or another, but I think the thing that bothers me is when I see people talking about how she has never put a foot wrong. Like the reason that Harry and Meghan couldn't have had private income generating careers and also have been working royals is because Edward and Sophie screwed it up, because they got involved in unethical activities and they got exposed and they humiliated the royal family. And Sophie has been involved in a number of controversies, but they all kind of stopped when Kate arrived and they had somebody new to talk about.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, I know I am have a Sophie vendetta. Like, I get it. My opinion is not to be trusted on this, but the Sophie is a bit like, it's in the weird way, the same way that Saint Kate exists. I don't like Saint Kate either, or Saint Diana. I don't like this kind of creation of a perfect Madonna woman who's never put a foot wrong. Except for other for both Diana and Kate, there are people going, but that's not true. Whereas for Sophie, people tend to be like, no, it is true. Whether you like her or not, this person exists.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think we've got similar reasons there of like it's just about the it's not that they're necessarily terrible people or who they've done anything as bad as some other members of their family. It's just that the level of praise is not in balance with what they've actually done.
Right, spinning the wheel. Okay, we have got question 35, and it is favorite documentary.
I think you said you were going to find this one difficult.
Yeah, I did because I thought I was going to find it really difficult. I did find it really difficult, to be fair, because I read that and thought I don't remember a single documentary I've ever seen ever about the royal family. So I went and Googled. This is the only one I particularly sort of researched in advance. So the first one that was in my head was the documentary they did. Where the Queen had, where they got the crown jewels out and showed them to the Queen, and she was like shaking them around, because to her they're just normal things. I think it's called like the coronation or something.
It was on my list, so I happen to know that it's called The Coronation and was released in 2018.
There you go, the coronation of 2018. That one stuck out in my head. Another one that stuck out to me, which I did a bit of Googling, was a Swedish one about tiaras. It was called like, I don't speak Swedish. It was called like Kungliga Smycken.
Yes, Royal Jewels.
Royal jewels, there you go. But that was a great one. I really liked that. And my main memory from that was just how shiny everything was. And then one time when I went to Kensington Palace and there were some tiaras there, I was like, oh no, they were right. They really are shiny in person. And then I went through a few others. And then there were like three other ones that came to mind. And I had to do a lot of research to figure out what the hell they were. So one of them was the one that was released just after the Queen died. It was called Elizabeth the Unseen Queen. And it had loads of pictures from her childhood that they just hadn't released before. And it was narrated by Charles. Not like sat, he didn't sit down and narrate it, but through things he said about his mum. They just put them over the top, which I really liked. And I really liked looking at those pictures. That was fun. I also chose Elizabeth at 90 because that was the one where all the family spoke about it. It was the first time Kate was in a family documentary. And then the other one was Charles at 70. It wasn't predominantly about Charles. It was more about the Prince's Trust.
Yes.
And I really like the Prince's Trust. So any documentary they've done about the Prince's Trust, actually, I quite like. They were the only ones I could think of, but also I can think of them because I like them.
I mean, I think you did a good job. I also had one of mine was the coronation one, because yes, it was great. It had so many moments of the Queen like picking up the state crown and just this jeweler having an absolute nervous breakdown inside, but not being able to tell the Queen to put it down. I've got a few others. Both two are Swedish. One is a documentary that they did in 2014, I want to say. About Haga Palace, which is the place where Crown Princess Victoria, Prince Daniel and their children live. It's basically a documentary about sort of the history of Haga Palace, but also about the current residents. And so Estelle was a tiny little baby and they took her around, they took the camera and Estelle out and around the grounds. And we had so much footage of Estelle like toddling around and playing with her parents. And it was just very natural and sweet. And I think I watched it. It was one of the first royal documentaries I ever watched when I joined the fandom. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. They would never do this in the UK. What's going on? And also from that same year, another Swedish documentary is Året med kungafamiljen, which is the year with the royal family, which is released every single year in December. But the 2014 edition was the year when Princess Sophia and Prince Carl Philip got engaged. And they use the way that they do it is they sort of go through the year, they follow them throughout the course of the year, and then at the end of the year they do a documentary where they show you what they did throughout the year. But they'll like intercut it with footage that was taken of them doing interviews or that was taken of them sort of at home and going about their private lives. And so during the summer they had followed all of the royals together at Solliden, their summer home. Just going out into the fields and playing with each other. So you had like Carl Philip playing with little Estelle. You had a baby Princess Leonor playing with her grandmother and with Estelle. You had a newly engaged Carl Philip and Sophia sort of chatting about how excited they were about the wedding. Since then, I've always loved that documentary. It's the highlight of my year. But since then, they tended to do more sort of solo things where they'll focus on the work or they'll only follow, you know, Victoria and her family. And it was the last time that I can remember them all being together for a special thing that we hadn't seen in footage anywhere else. This was like exclusive footage for this documentary.
I really like that.
My last choice is probably my favorite royal documentary ever, which is Reinventing the Royals.
I knew you were going to pick that one.
Yeah. Mark Boland. It's the documentary that was done by the BBC, not in collaboration with the royals, about the relationship between the royal family and the press. And in particular, it had people being interviewed who had not been interviewed before on record, who were part of the press team during the era after Diana died and before Charles married Camilla. And so it was exploring kind of like the relationship, you know, the agreements that protected William and Harry when they were at school, and kind of Mark Boland, which we talked about in the Camilla myth in that episode, the kind of Machiavellian PR genius that Charles employed to rehabilitate his and Camilla's image, and kind of the really interesting way that he worked with the press. And I liked it because I do love the sugary documentaries where you get to see like old footage of the royals and all that sort of stuff. But at the same time, I know it's sugary and like it has been approved by the royal family. It's almost a propaganda, you know, it's a PR tool. And I liked this one because it had insiders talking, like not just fake royal experts, but without the having to have the stamp of approval from the royals.
I think I've never seen it, but I've heard about it predominantly from you. And it's one of those things just like, at some point in a world where it still exists, I need to find it.
Yeah, it might be taken off iPlayer. Right, next question. Spin the wheel. Okay, number 30. Oh, this one's so hard. How would you cast a The Crown style fictional drama series about the Swedish royal family? Not taking into account whether or not they speak Swedish. Thank you. This was so hard.
Oh, I'm going to be really honest in the fact that I did this quite late at night last week, the day before we recorded last week. And in the end, I was just like, vibes entirely. I was like, who's giving me Carl Gustaf vibes? So it's weird, my list. I've got to apologize. They're not remotely look-alike at all.
Well, yeah, I think anyone who's sent me a message on Tumblr at any point will know that I don't really see facial similarities very easily. So I was like, this is going to be absolutely terrible. So some of mine I think are good. Some of them are not so much good. Not so much good. That's not good English. Are not so good. So my King Carl Gustaf is probably the one that I am happiest with, and then I think all the rest go downhill. So I have chosen the actor Jim Broadbent.
Okay, I can see that.
Because I think they have very similar facial shapes, and when they wear glasses, I could be like, yeah, those. So, yeah, I could see those two looking alike. If you can Google him, I'm sure we'll post something. But
My Carl Gustaf, who's also the one I'm the most confident with, I went for Steve Martin because he's funny and has white hair.
I would love to see a Crown, a serious TV show about the Swedish royal family that has Steve Martin as the king. The Queen.
So my queen choice does not look anything like Sylvia, but they give me similar vibes of being like softly spoken and powerful. So I went for Angela Bassett.
Oh, the Daily Mail would be so mad at you.
They're going right now, someone's writing it down, like, how dare they?
Well, I wanted, so I was looking for somebody who was. I was trying not to do that thing where that Hollywood does, where it casts age-appropriate men and then women who are actually 10 years younger than the real person. So I was trying to
Yeah.
cast people who are around the same age, and I think when I think about Sylvia, I think of like a very, very elegant woman. Her hair is always perfect, and she always looks perfect from head to toe. Like there's never anything wrong. And so I went with Linda Carter, who played Wonder Woman.
What a good choice.
Yes, I think it would be interesting to see her being married to Jim Broadbent.
I like it. I can see that.
Crown Princess Victoria, shall we do next? Oh, I found this really hard. No one looks like her. I ended up going with Melanie Lynskey.
Okay.
It was basically sort of, I was trying to pick somebody with a similar sort of prominent chin, which is what Victoria's got. But yeah, I'm not convinced on that choice. I would hear like to hear other people's options.
My choice for Crown Princess Victoria was Kirsten Dunst, mainly because I just watched Civil War and I got the kind of could be fun. It can be very fun, but also hardworking vibes from that. And I was like, yeah, I can see it. Kirsten Dunst has always seemed to be quite fun, but just gets on with everything. Again, does not really match with my Daniel choice at all.
Well, shall we move on to him then?
Yes.
Okay. Who did you pick?
So I went for Steve Carell.
Oh, okay. Being married to Kirsten
Kirsten
Dunst.
Dunst. Yeah, that's where I went.
Yeah, no. Well, I would like to see, I would see I'm still reeling from Angela Bassett. So yeah, everything else in comparison, I'm like, yeah, sure, that makes sense. I went and we're getting into the thirst section of the choices. He has like slick hair and is Scandinavian. So I went with Mads Mikkelsen from Hannibal.
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of see it.
With glasses on, the slicked hair. I think he would be the Hollywood version. Prince Carl Philip. We're still in the thirst section because I went with Jamie Dornan.
I can see that.
Beard, he's got beardy, he's got kind of curly hair, but I also went with him because Carl Philip is somebody who I cannot, you if you look at that face, you think going through life with that face, you must be awful because you're so attractive. But then actually when you watch him in interviews, he's like quite gentle and shy. And Jamie Dornan has the same quality because he's so hot that you think he's going to be arrogant and awful to be around. And then you watch him on talk shows and he's just like the most, it's almost like he hates people saying nice things about him and he gets so uncomfortable.
I also went for someone who is quite attractive but nice. So I went for Kit Harington.
Oh yes, that's also a good choice, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, yep, he's got dark curly hair. He is very attractive. He seems nice. He loves his wife and children.
He's very handsome as well. Princess Sophia.
I found this really, really hard.
Same, yeah.
But so then I thought about what Sophia was like, and I was like, someone who, had a past, maybe not like fully royal, but doesn't, it's not ashamed of that, but it's very clever, very kind, does lots of good in the world. So I went for Megan Fox.
Like who? So who would she be married to? Kit Harington. They would make beautiful babies.
They would make very beautiful babies.
So I wanted somebody who had a gap in their teeth. Not that that's the sum of Sophia's personality and identity, but I was trying to find people who were vaguely similar looking. So, and there are not that many actresses with gaps in their teeth. There are lots of people who the internet wants to convince me are actresses, but they are models. They're not actresses. And so I ended up doing an unintentional 50 Shades of Grey reunion and picking Dakota Johnson.
Oh, I like it. That would get the crowds in at the box office. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. A very attractive couple to be, you know. Princess Madeline. So I, again, when I think of Princess Madeline, I think very, very blue eyes. Her jaw is very notable as well to me. She's about 3 years younger than Princess Madeline. So she just looks very young. So I went with Brittany Snow.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I can see that.
Yeah. So she looks very young. I would have been like, oh, she's like 24, but she's 38. So she's not too inappropriately cast for Madeline. And she's got very, very blue eyes.
So I didn't really think of whether they look alike at all. They've got kind of similar hair. But this person could do accents. They're very self-deprecating, which I think Madeline can be.
Yeah.
And they're very pretty. So I went for Emily Blunt.
Oh, yes. You know, I don't think that's bad. I think that's, if Hollywood was doing a movie about Princess Madeline, I think they would cast Emily Blunt. Well, I'm about to do Chris. And it does not make sense for this person to be married to Brittany Snow. But that's because Brittany Snow looks so young, but she is the right age. Because I went for Chris, I went for a clean-shaven David Harbour from Stranger Things.
Okay. I can definitely see that.
I wanted somebody who had quite like a wide face and looked quite gruff, but actually is not gruff at all when you get to know them.
I thought, well, they have to be British. Like, this is their one chance to get an actual British actor to be. They're all probably going to be British, but they get a proper British actor in. I thought, since Madeline is probably, and Chris are going to have like the least important role, they're probably going to be like the your star couple celebrity cameos who pop in every now and then. So I went for Henry Cavill.
Lovely. Yeah. We went very different directions.
I know. I thought it was quite a weird face. I thought Chris doesn't need to be, you know, Chris accurate particularly because he's not going to have a major role. So he could be anyone, really. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, yeah, Henry Cavill was a good. He's got, they look vaguely similar.
Great. Well, we got through it.
Spinning the wheel. Woo. It is question 37. Do minor royals pull their weight? Which was from my mum. And her exact question was, since now the king and Kate are ill, are the minor royals doing any work? And by that, I mean Edward and Sophie, not Princess Anne. We know she does work. So that was her exact question. And I rephrased it slightly. So it sounded less like it came from me. It's a hard question in a way. But my answer is that they are doing, the minor royals are doing what they normally do. So whether or not they're pulling their weight depends on whether you ever think they're pulling their weight, because they're not like slacking off because Charles is home poorly. And I think the only reason people are thinking about them is because the press went through like 3 weeks of being like, okay, so we have to talk about Edward and Sophie and all the minor roles because we're making a really big deal of the fact that Charles isn't actually working. And then they realized quite quickly that royals do really boring things, so they stopped. Princess Alexandra did 4 engagements last year, so I could make the argument that no, she did not pull her weight.
Yeah,
but at the same time, she's an elderly woman and she's not in the best of health. And she's worked really hard for a very long time. Really, the only people in this position are Anne, Ed, that you can sort of really go into are the Gloucesters, Anne, Edward and Sophie. And obviously Anne does, and the Duke of Gloucester and the Duke of Edinburgh, I would say, definitely do. And I would say that Sophie and the Duchess of Gloucester, it's not that they don't pull their weight, it's just they do an amount that is compatible with what Camilla, William and Kate do. And they are the three who I think possibly don't pull their weight.
There's something about the phrasing of pull their weight. It implies that they could do more and that people would want them to do more and they are not doing more. I do think that if you looked at just the numerical share, there are some royals who are doing more than others, and that's just factual. But I don't think that the reason that some are doing less than others is because they just can't be bothered.
I was talking to a blog last night, and you'd answered a question, about whether or not Crown Princess Victoria was going to go to Eurovision, and you said, like, well, if she's asked to, she will, and if she's not asked to, she won't. And I think that really just summed up the answer. It's like, oh yeah, kind of reminds me that, yeah, they're just kind of doing what they're told, royals, like they're doing a job.
So, next question. What will it be? Who knows? Only the wheel. Number 24. This is from my mum. If you could be a fly on the wall in any royal household, past or present, which would it be and why? And I know she'll be listening. Thank you very much to my mother. That was a great question. I really liked it.
It's a great question.
That's a
Although I
great
found it really hard to answer.
I mean, any of them. I mean, I think like the basic answer would obviously be like the Tudors and Henry VIII. But other than that, if I had to put that aside and try and give something that's, I mean, my second answer would not be any less, it would be slightly less basic. I would be really interested in kind of being a fly on the wall during the times where monarchies fell. So the French Revolution, the fall of the Romanovs, the collapse of various regimes. That was what I'd be quite, I want to see all the drama.
Yeah, my first thought was the Tudors. And then I thought about like modern royals. If I could be a fly on the wall, I think if I could be a fly on the wall in anyone, I'd want to go to Monaco. And then I'd watch Charlene and Albert being happy to each other. And I'd come back and be like, proof, see?
No, I would also agree with Monaco. And then I also chucked in Thailand. Although that would be probably quite a distressing experience for me as a fly to be in that environment, but at least I can get away. Yeah, I think the ones where there's sort of like there's a bit of drama.
I just want to be somewhere where there's something going on, like, like in the post-Diana Windsor household. I'd love to just be floating around being like Charles trying to get Camilla in, seeing like the Queen being like, not sure about this.
Yeah, I think I'd be happy in any of the Medici family households.
All the Borgias. Give us the
Yeah.
Borgias. That's as dramatic. They'd be having some cracking times.
Yeah. That would be pretty fun. Anything where there's like intrigue. I think there's sometimes, there's like where there's ambiguity and where we might never know the actual answer to how things were, that's when I'd want to be there so I could see it for myself.
I'd like to see what happened with the princes in the tower.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Around by Richard III, and see whether or not he really did kill his nephews, or whether they just went sent off somewhere nicely and had a lovely day.
I mean, it just reminded me of last week when you said that your favourite title was the one that was held by the guy accused of being Jack the Ripper. And this week you're like, if I could be a fly on the wall, it would be during the murder of two children.
Wouldn't want to see the murder. I just like to know whether he did it or not.
I was saying like, well, we're during the execution of a family. Like, it's quite bleak actually when you think about what we just said. We'll check out before the actual murders happen because we're too delicate for that.
Is it my spinning turn? Spin the wheel. It is number 31. If you could have tea with one current member of any royal family, who would it be and why? So not to give the most basic and obvious answer in the world, but I would have tea with
Sophie.
yeah, surprise, someone different there. I would have tea with the Princess of Wales because she's my favorite person. I'd like to have a one-on-one private conversation with her, and I'd prefer it if it was, I don't actually like tea, so I prefer if it wasn't tea. I know I'm not a very good British person. I
No,
don't like
let's
tea.
cut this off now.
So I prefer like maybe some cakes. We could have cake and
Yes.
orange juice or something. I'd like it if it was like a no hole sort of you could talk about anything conversation, so I could find out all the gossip. But I appreciate the fact that in a polite tea party situation, that isn't what happens. So I would be fine with just chatting about her engagements, her patronages, what she wants to achieve with things, what she's most proud of. And I would tell her about me because I feel like I know so much about her, she should know the same about me to make it fair.
Very sweet. Well, I think it's something you said there that's quite interesting about like you'd want, the gossip, but it's tea and all this. I was thinking the exact same thing when I was answering this. I was like, I want to get drunk with someone. I don't want to have a tea with them. So I was thinking, who do I think is the best opportunity to get some kind of gossip over tea? Who do I think could have that kind of, who would be a bit of a gossip? So I went with Camilla. Camilla seems like she'd be a great laugh. And I think that if I did just rock up as some random person who won a competition to have tea with Camilla, she would be really easy to talk to. And I wouldn't, you know, I think with Kate, I'd probably spend the whole time being nervous and then get nothing out of it. Well, Victoria is the same. So I think with Camilla, like she'd set me at ease really quickly and I'd feel quite comfortable and be able to have a bit of a laugh with her. And I think that she might say gossipy things, nothing earth-shattering, but I think that, you know, you'd get like a sideways glance or an eye roll or something once she's loosened up a little bit, more than I think you would with other royals who might be a bit more guarded.
That's a very good choice. I think I'd enjoy hanging out with Camilla. If I was going for like mega gossip, I'd probably go for Fergie.
Well, yes, of course. Fergie would definitely be the one who would be most likely to give you gossip. I also don't know if he would trust the gossip.
Yeah, I'd come out being like, is that true?
Okay, next question. Spinning the wheel. Number 27. Is there a piece of royal jewellery that you wish you could wear? Yep, my answer is very simple. I will wear the crown. I know what this question was getting at, and I was like, I'm not going to answer it that way because I think if you're given the opportunity, you go big or you go home. I'm going to wear the crown and see you guys later.
I
All of my answers were whatever is the biggest diamond or the biggest tiara that they have in their collection. That's what I'll have, even if it's ugly.
I mean, to be fair, my answer was any tiara. Like,
Yeah.
I'm not fussed. I just like to wear a tiara, please. Yeah, I'm not really a jewelry person, and also I don't know any famous. Like, I did try and be really sensible and Google like famous royal jewelry, but then it just came up with like tiaras. So I was like, well, the universe is telling me something here. The universe is saying pick a tiara. So I did. I mean, if I had to pick a sensible tiara that I think would suit me, I'd probably pick like the Strathmore rose, but one across the head, so it's kind of cool. But in terms of tiaras, I would just like to wear the banished fleur-de-lis one I would wear because that's huge and fancy, and I think I could rock it if I was in the right had enough attitude. I could rock that.
Yeah,
But yeah.
that's a good one.
Spinning the wheel. It is question number 19, which is best monarch. No surprises that the best monarch is King Harald of Norway because he's brilliant, and never done one thing wrong ever, apart from recently when he went on holiday and got ill. That was very inconvenient. But apart from that, he's never done one thing wrong ever, and he's raised some lovely children and lovely grandchildren, and just seems like an all round nice man, and I would feel very safe with him in a dark room. So he
Yes.
wins.
Yes, I would too. We had a whole episode about Harold where you can go back and listen to that. But I think that being a monarch is kind of like you're the point of leadership of the family. You're the CEO. And I think Harold's done a really good job of being modern and open and inclusive without doing it just for the sake of like temporary good headlines on Twitter. It's like thoughtful and considered. And his family have handled their scandals and things in such a healthy, positive way where they've done what's right for the monarchy, but also shown a really healthy example of how to work together as a family, like how to be colleagues and family members.
Yeah, he's just a good man, and everything seems to be, going quite smoothly.
Yeah, and I think there's just so many lovely little isolated moments of like obviously his we talked about in the LGBTQ plus episode his groundbreaking speech about how Norway is for everyone, his speeches to Ingrid Alexandra when she turned 18 and were just very loving and grandfatherly but also kingly and perfect combination of the two. He's very funny as well, so that makes it, you know, he's not just a I think the Queen was very good at being the Queen, but she was a bit dry sometimes. Time for the next question. And I am spinning the wheel. Number 28. Is there any topic or story that you want to cover on the podcast but haven't had a chance to yet? I mean, lots, I think.
So many.
So many things. Well, we've got a list. There isn't anything that I'd like to cover that like we haven't because it's like controversial or anything like that. There it's just because we haven't got round to it yet.
Yeah, I think we're very good at being like, yeah, we want to cover this, or should we cover this, but we'll wait. And I think, you know, you're more of a hoarder of questions than I am, but I'm also a bit of a hoarder, so we're a bit like, oh, we don't want to do this just yet, just in case, like all the royals just do very boring things forever, there's nothing else to talk about. So if we can stretch them out, we will.
Yeah, definitely. But I think so. I always like corruption, and power and discussions about that, as people will know. So there's a lot that we haven't talked about. You know, I've mentioned them a surprising amount this episode, but there's a lot from like Thailand that, you know, we've only scratched the surface of some of their absolutely bonkers scandals. I don't want to give too much away, but kind of conversations about like the popularity of the monarchy, whether or not the monarchy is going to survive. I'd quite like to talk more generally about like positives and negatives of the monarchy, which we touched on last week. So that kind of thing, the more existential questions, I would like to get around to eventually.
Yeah, I really like the ones where we do like a deep dive into a royal or a royal family, particularly because like I like dates and things. I really loved our episode on the Greek royal family, like Greek monarchs. I didn't think I was going to love that, but it's one of my favorite episodes we've ever done.
Monkey assassin.
Monkey really just got me.
Yeah.
But it's also the things I'd like to do, things on topics I don't know much about. Like I'd really like to do more. The word abolished monarchies, more of the ones that have fallen, because the only one we've really spoken about are the Greeks, and they're kind of still here, they're just not important.
And it's Italy.
And Italy, yeah, but like there's Italy we've mentioned, but like there's the whole of Russia,
Yeah.
France, yeah, about 87, you know, Portugal,
Germany's got like 9,000.
yeah. And then even like within that, things like looking at like historical royals, like when we were doing, or royals that I don't think about, like when we were doing our research for like divorcees, the Netherland sisters, I was just like, wow, they've had such interesting lives. So yeah, I just want to talk about every royal that's ever existed ever.
So we better get started. That won't take forever.
Fine, we can offer that in. It's spinning, the wheel is spinning. And the wheel is stopping. It's question 34, which is your favorite royal pet. So, I am not the most animal person ever.
You don't like tea? You don't like animals?
Not like I hate animals, I'm not like an animal hater, but in, you know, the grand scheme of things, animals are not my favorite things that have ever existed. But my favorite royal pet is those big fluffy dogs in Norway. They're called
Oh,
like
yes.
Muffin and Minnie because they're very fluffy, they look very cuddly and very polite, and I bet they've been trained really well.
I think it's really surprising to me that you don't like animals when you're a primary school teacher.
Don't like hate them, but yeah, people was like, oh, let's go see the animals, and I'm like, okay, if you want to.
I just think they're so similar to children who you chose to spend your life around,
They
that
are
it
very similar.
surprises me. Maybe you just get too
Yeah.
much of that sort of needy.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm like, leave me alone now.
I need a break. Well, I think those are good answers. I love them. They're very soft. They're like, what are they? Cockadoodle or something. Is that what, another type of dog?
Sounds like a dog.
Labradoodles. They're just labradoodles. Okay. I made that overly complicated.
They look fluffier than your average labradoodle. Not that I know what
Thank
labradoodle
you.
looks like.
Yeah.
In my head, they're not that fluffy, but yeah.
They have appeared at a few events, like when William and Kate arrived in Norway, they greeted them.
Yeah.
So they're pets that met William and Kate, so that obviously will give them points as well in your estimations, I'm
Yeah.
sure.
Ranks them right up.
Yeah, better than any stupid dogs who haven't met William and Kate.
That's why Lupo was so high. I was like, he met them, he lived with them for a bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, but he also died, so he doesn't count.
Yeah. Well, sadly, there are no great cat lovers. Not that I don't like, I dislike dogs. I love dogs a lot, but you know, I feel like there's an injustice has been done to cats. My runner-up is Rio. He's the dog of the Crown Princess family of Sweden, and he regularly goes out to engagements. He does more engagements than Madeline, I think. And because he's regularly out and about with Victoria, she'll just take him whenever she goes on like long treks to public parks and things. She will take the dog with her, and he's often in photo shoots, and he's very, very cute. But my favorite royal pet is Pancake.
Oh, pancake.
He is the dog of Marie and Louis de Craye, who Louis de Craye is the son of Princess Stephanie of Monaco, so the nephew of Prince Albert. And they have a dog called Pancake, who I'm not really sure what breed he is, but he, you know, people might be thinking, why is the dog that is owned by two such junior members of the family your favorite? And it's because they kind of, they're very much made their social media accounts about the dog. And the dog gets integrated into a lot of
Yes.
the things that they do. And so they dress him up and post pictures of him being dressed up for like Halloween. And they do family themed costumes. And he was in their wedding quite noticeably and wore a little fake tuxedo, which I think is incredible and adorable. He was in the announcement of that they were having a baby, where he was going to be a big brother. Pancake is very much like their child. They're one of those, I think they're millennial parents who treat their dog like their baby before they have a human baby. We get loads of content, and it's always him being cute and dressed up and participating in royal things. So it's Pancake. Time for the next question. Spinning the wheel. Where will it land? You don't know any of the numbers, listeners, so you have no idea. I realized that last week, and I was like, we kept seeing number 17. They don't have a list.
We have
We have the list. Actually, it is number 17.
Oh.
That was funny. Do you think Prince William and Kate knew about all the conspiracies? Yeah.
Done.
Done. Yeah. I don't think that William and Kate are like the type of people who sit and search their name on Google, but they read the news. Their friends probably read the news. So I do not think that they knew every single conspiracy theory in depth, where it came from, the extent of it. Because they weren't feeling it in the way that some people who, you know, we were, I suppose, because we're royal watchers, we were seeing this barrage. I don't think it would have necessarily felt the same to them because they weren't actually experiencing it. But I think that they will have known there are a lot of conspiracy theories. These are the popular ones, and it's quite intense.
Yeah, I think, like, I definitely think they knew. I don't think they searched it out. I think they were told. I think William got more annoyed about it than Kate did. I imagine she was like, but I'm not dead, so it's fine. And William was like, they can't say you're dead when you're not. It's not fair. I think they were told kind of as it kind of spiraled. Like, they probably were told initially, like, there's some weird rumors going on that you're secretly dead, and they laughed it off. And then by the time it got to towards Mother's Day, they were like, oh, after the Constantine thing, they were like, okay, so the rumors are, they're kicking up a bit. Just be aware. And then I imagine after that, William probably had it on his little briefing list. He was like, conspiracy theory check. Like, can we just see how the tide is turning?
I feel like they would have had to know because they would have had to have approved certain responses to things, or like, I do want to comment on this, or I don't want to comment on this. I imagine those things would have been run past them. So I would say it would probably have been in the form of like a briefing, as you say.
Is it my turn to spin the
It
wheel?
is.
It's question 44. The question 44 is, do you think there will be a big British turnout at things like Ascot without Kate and Charles? I know the person who sent this in is not the Daily Mail, but I was reading a cracking Daily Mail article the other day that was like, Charles is dependent on Beatrice's big turnout in the summer. And I was reading through the things that Beatrice will be doing in the summer, and I was like, she does them anyway. So yes, I think that the turnout at Ascot and Wimbledon and Garter and the horse shows and whatever else happens in the summer, the Chelsea Flower Show will be unchanged, with the exception of Kate, Will, and Charles, who may or may not be there.
I mean, I don't really pay much attention to these events anyway, so I've got no idea. Charles has been slowly coming back to things, and I feel like Kate hardly ever went to Ascot anyway.
It's like four times.
Yeah. She didn't go for years at the start, so I wouldn't necessarily even really associate her with going to Ascot regularly. So, yeah, I don't think that anybody else will stop going or will go as a consequence of this. It's not something that I think the wider public really is that fussed about or interested in. Specifically the royal attendance at Ascot. But I do think that the press will be like, royal family show up as a strength, as a show of unity while Charles battles. It'll be like, it'll be the exact same people who are there every single other year, but they'll make a big deal out of it.
Yeah, it will definitely be like Beatrice out again, saving the day. And it's like,
Yeah.
she always goes to Royal Ascot.
Yeah,
She's there
she's
all
every
the
day normally as well. Okay, we're on the last few, so let's have a spin of the wheel. It is number 3. Also from my mum. How did we meet and how did we become friends? I might let you take this one.
Yes, I was going to say, I should take the lead on this one.
Yeah.
So, not to sound like a stalker, but back in the day, before I had a proper blog, a royal blog, I had other blogs and then just stalked a few royal accounts, the same ones every time, and one of them was yours. And then I did follow, like, you, it's like three of you right at the beginning, and that was it. They were the only royal blogs I followed. I didn't follow anyone else. And then I made my royal account and then started following a few more and just kind of stalked. And I literally mean, like, every day I was like, ooh, the morning news, better check on my three blogs, how they're getting on. And I would check it every day. There's just three of them. And then as time went on, I was like, okay, I don't know how it happened, really. I just stalked a lot until this ended up happening. We ended up having a podcast. I'm not sure how that actually went from me being a single, like a parasocial stalker, to you being on a podcast with me. Not sure how that jump was made. It just did one day.
Yeah, well, so for context, I used to be a big deal. I'm very much like a pop star who had a big hit in the 80s and is now in the twilight of their career. I don't like saying because it makes me sound very arrogant, but it is true. And I remember you were really excited because I reblogged you or something at one point.
You don't want to go in my tag for your blog name because it's very embarrassing.
Yeah.
You definitely fall in there. It just makes me laugh.
I mean, I like people saying nice things about me, so it was a media win. And but I think you just made me laugh or something, and I agreed with the way that you saw things, and so I think I must have followed you at some point. I mean, I wouldn't say before the podcast we were friends, definitely. We were friendly, but we didn't really have like I had closer friendships, and I'm sure you
Yeah,
did as
I knew
well.
nothing about you.
Yeah. But then it was really weird. I wanted to do a podcast for a while because I'm a millennial and you reach a certain age and then you just have this desperate urge to do a podcast. I thought, well, I need a co-host because if it's just me talking, I don't like the sort of single host podcasts quite as much as like a duo talking to each other. And then I think you made an offhand remark and you said something about like, oh, when I start my royal podcast. And I think it was like a flippant kind of comment about starting a podcast. And I saw that and I was like, oh yeah, of course, Grace. She'd be the perfect person to do this podcast with. I reached out and I said like, do you actually want to do this? We could do this, you know. And then it took us ages for various reasons. But I think it was like I knew I when I if I was going to do something, I knew that I didn't want it to become like a gossipy, nasty podcast. And I wanted it to be like informative and reasoned and have an opportunity to explore things in and like the nuance of things. And I felt like you would be exactly the same and we would be able to have a good rapport. But then obviously speaking to you every week, we've just gotten to know each other more and more. And my mum sent me a little voice note after she listened to the 100th episode. And it was basically, I sent it to Grace, but it's basically just saying like that she completely sees why we're friends. Because when Grace was talking about how she would play with her sister when she was little, but they'd never actually get around to playing because Grace had to explain all of the very complicated rules at the beginning of the game. My mum was like, that's just so you. You do exactly the same thing. So I think I've actually learned how similar we are through doing this.
Yeah, sometimes you say something and I'm like, oh, that's me. I've
Yeah,
done that.
we're both slightly neurotic. Who like rules?
This is what I'm like. Sometimes I will be like, oh, we're not going to see the same as this one. Clearly, we'll
Yeah.
be different. And then you'll start explaining. I'm like, oh, we're going to say that.
Yeah.
I've done it a lot, like this episode and last episode, like, especially when I'm not entirely sure at the start and my idea's forming. I'm like, right, I know where I'm going with this. And then the more you talk, I'm like, oh, no, we are saying the same thing
Yeah.
again.
Yeah. We keep trying to disagree with each other on principle, but we're both just so correct. Your turn.
Spinning the wheel. It is number 25. Odds Madeline actually moves back to Sweden. I like to imagine just someone like shouting it, like, what do you think? During last year, it was announced that Princess Madeline and her husband and their three children were going to move back to Sweden. The children were going to do their schooling in Sweden then. They were going to come back towards the end of the year. And then in the kind of early autumn, they were like, it's been a delay. And there were lots of rumors that it was to do with like the house selling in Sweden, in Florida, and things like that. And then it's just gone very radio silent.
I mean, I think it's really hard to know because they haven't told me anything. Madeline and I have our weekly lunches. She doesn't keep me up to date with the move. I do think they will move to Sweden.
Yeah, I thought about it for a really long time and I was like, I could see it either way. I could see them not moving, but I could also see them moving, mainly because they haven't said they're not moving.
Yes, yeah. Until that point. I think she's always missed Sweden. She kind of moved to the US after her engagement broke down, and then she happened to meet Chris and fall in love with him. And then for his work, they moved to various different places. And I think, that's a lot of people are quite critical of it, but I think like that's a marriage ultimately, is like sometimes you have to make decisions that are best for the family, even if you might want to live in Sweden. I do think that they will move back eventually, but I just also don't think that they're in any rush.
Yeah, I think, I'd imagine Madeline woke up one day and was like, all my children have American accents.
I can't do this.
And that something must have changed in Chris's work to give them the ability to move back to Sweden. And I imagine there was some kind of, we will live in America. That's where your job is, where the kids are young. And then when we can, we're going to move to Sweden. And then, they were selling their house. When something went wrong, or Chris's job was like, actually, we need you for another 8 months. And they said, okay, well, we'll stay here for another 8 months and then we'll let the kids finish their school year. I don't know what happened, but something clearly was like, okay, we can't move right now. But, everything we've heard from the palace has very clearly been they are still going to move at some point. Whether they move this summer, next summer, in 5 years, I think they will move.
Okay, we are down to the final three. So I'm going to spin the wheel. Number four. When did you start royal watching? Who slash what got you into royal watching? So I did talk about my interest in royals generally in last week's episode. So you can go but listen to my childhood stories. So I decided to do this question as more like, how did I get involved in sort of royal watching in an online way? So yeah, I've always been interested in royals, as I mentioned, since I was little. I wasn't as interested in the modern day royals, but then I was at St Andrews when William and Kate got engaged. And so I did get caught up in a lot of that. I did sleep through their visit, so I didn't see them then. But I was there during, like when all the news vans were turning up and interviewing random people, and it was such a packed place and everyone was very excited and there was bunting up everywhere and everyone went full out for it because obviously they got engaged, they met each other there. And then I started a Tumblr account. I mostly blogged about films, and then I remember because people, it was, I think it was in 2012, so it was a little bit after the royal wedding and their visit to St Andrews and everything, but I was vaguely interested in William and Kate, and I remember searching for them on Tumblr, just being like, well, I wonder what's all out there, and I found out there was all these people who talked about the royals all the time. At the time, there were loads of blogs, but there was like one British person who really hated William and Kate. And because she was British and a little bit older, a lot of the kind of young Americans in the fandom took everything they said as being gospel. And they would always be like, oh, well, British people think this about Kate. And I'd be like, no one thinks about Kate at all. This is total nonsense. And even though I didn't know as much about modern day royalty at the time, I was like, I know that that's not true. I kind of lurked for a while and then eventually set up my account in 2014 because I was getting to a point where I'd been learning. I'd spent the last 2 years learning how, the facts so that I could challenge this person with more authority. So I knew a lot and I was capable of doing a lot of research about her claims and finding out whether or not they were true. And I kept wanting to like reblog things and add like seven long paragraphs with statistics and sources and graphs and video footage from the time and like all this detail. And I was like, I can't do this on my film account that's followed by my friends. So I'm going to set up an account. And I guess, yeah, I just realized like there was a space for me because there wasn't anybody who was doing what I wanted to do at the time.
Mine kind of started similar. I'd known about royals, like I said, for my whole life, and I'd been sort of particularly aware about Kate kind of from 2007 onwards. I think when they broke up, there was a lot of horrible news articles, and as an 11-year-old, I clearly read them and was like, well, that's very mean. So I had a Tumblr that was non-royal related. I still have it. It's still very functional. And then after, I remember after Will and Kate's wedding, like there'd be like newspapers would make these like cheap magazines where it'd be like best pictures of Kate in red this year, and I was like, Mum, we need to buy this because I need to see these. I was like, no one was. I couldn't, talk to my friends about it because my friends were like, royals are awful, and why would you talk about them? And I'm not watching the royal wedding. I was like, okay, but I am. It's really important. So then I started to kind of 2012-ish start sort of looking, and I found that's when I found your account.
Yeah.
Kind of 2013, 2014. And I was kind of watching them, and I followed a few. I still only watched Will and Kate, really. And then when I went to uni, it was when Kate was in her second pregnancy. And then I was watching more and more and sort of hearing more about other people, and it was around the time Charlotte was born, it might have been the day she was born, I was like, right, that's it. I'm gonna have to set up my own blog. And it is still just a side blog on my main blog, which is the bane of my life. If I can make it its own blog without losing anything, I would. And then I didn't really post on it, I just used it to watch people even more.
Mm-hmm.
Until the summer when Carl, Philip and Sophia got married. There's all these other royals, they're so pretty, there's like little tiny princesses. What on earth is this? And yeah, that I was like, okay, maybe I should look into this whole thing. And that's, yeah, I always think that wedding was the one for my brain where it just went, I want to watch this, I want to see all of it. So I have a real soft spot for them and their wedding.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah,
I went.
You were there, kicked me off. And I think it wasn't kind of, it wasn't until I went to uni that I was like, oh, I can set this up, because my parents did not know I had a Tumblr. So I would go on the laptop in the living room and go in like incognito mode.
Rebel.
But yeah, so it wasn't until I went to uni when I was like, oh, I could just make a royal blog, but I still made a side blog, which I hate. But yeah, it was very much Carl, Philippe and Sophia's wedding that set it off for me looking at all of them. And then, yeah, I have not looked back.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
I'm spinning the wheel. So our penultimate question is, what is your favourite royal wedding dress and least favourite, and why?
I don't think I know your favourite.
So for my favourite, my runner-up favourite dress is not a real royal. It's Princess Ekaterina of Hanover.
Oh, yes.
Who has, like, she had 4 wedding dresses and all of them are stunning. And they're very, like, intricate and big and fancy.
Mm-hmm.
But my overall favourite wedding dress is Princess Eugenie's. It's a bit different. It doesn't have a veil, and I don't really like veils.
Mm-hmm.
I like it suits her, and it suits that kind of autumn wedding vibe. And the fact she had the back open to show off her scoliosis scar is really sweet. And I have scoliosis. And not, I don't have a scoliosis scar, but I do have scoliosis. So I was like, oh, look, imagine. As soon as I saw it, I thought, wow. And it's weird because all my other like top 10 wedding dresses are lacy and fancy. It's my favourite dress.
It's one of my top 3 as well, or one of my top choices. I think if we go back to last week's episode, I talked about why my favourite, how my favourite fashion moments tend to be things that are sort of special to the individual, communicating some sort of message, that have some sort of symbolism behind them. And I loved that decision to have an exposed back and show the scar and make the scar like a feature. I thought that was such a beautiful touch. I really like Victoria's, which I wouldn't have said I would like, because it's nothing like what I would want to wear, but I think it just fits her so beautifully. And like it's like an off the shoulder neckline, which is just so perfect for her. But my favorite royal wedding dress, again, is a very basic answer, is Grace Kelly's.
But that's a good wedding dress there.
Yeah, I think it's like, it set the mold. You can see so many modern royals or rich people or whoever who get married, and people are like, oh, it's Grace Kelly inspired.
Yeah, it feels like it's like the original gown, like the mold, like you said, the mold for all of them that have come since.
Your least?
So I thought I'd build up to my least favourite. So my third least favourite is Crown Princess Marie Chantal's wedding dress. It's got this kind of, I think it's supposed to be a nice lace pattern over the top of her, like her shoulders, except the pattern is like lumps of lace in like little circles, and it looks like she's got a horrible disease, and the lace doesn't also match the lace on her, all the way down her dress, so it just feels like they were like, oh no, we're going to a church, better have some lace on the top. My second least favorite is Charlotte Casaraghi's civil wedding dress, which is like, I don't even know what color it is, but it's got these hideous bows on it. It's just not good. It's Yves Saint Laurent, and it's not very fashionable or nice, and I would never wear it, let alone to my wedding.
And also, I mean, even her normal wedding dress, it was like a lace jellyfish. It was, yeah.
Yeah, all of her, she had like 3 or 4 wedding dresses as well, and they're all bad. This is the worst of them. And then my least favourite wedding dress is Diana's, because it's too big, and it's horrible, and it's like an 80s disaster piece. I saw it at Kensington Palace one, and looking at it front on, with no one in it. I was like, oh, maybe it's not that bad. And then I turned around slightly and I was like, oh no, it's even worse in person.
It's too puffy. It crinkled in the back of the carriage or whatever it was, or the car or whatever she rode to the church in. And I think she was this quite a small person and it just like swamped her.
Yeah, it's pure 80s. It's pure bad 80s.
Yeah, unsurprisingly, that was also my least favourite. I did have a couple of others. Just, I have a theme. I don't like the ones that are like super, super shiny. Like this, it's like, I think it's a satin thing, but there are some, I think Victoria's might be satin and it's quite nicely done, but it always looks really cheap. And I think there's a couple. So Sarah Ferguson, this might be controversial, Queen Mary. The reason I don't like them is because they're very, very, very shiny in that shiny fabric, but they also look kind of yellow. It kind of looks like it's been in an attic for 100 years and then they've just taken it out and put it straight on them without doing any restoration work or anything. So there's a few of those that I think are just like very, very shiny and kind of have a yellowy sheen to them. I think Marta Louise's was another one. I dither about Queen Rania. It's awful, but also it might have the camp factor.
Yeah, there's a few I looked at and thought, okay, that's really bad. But
it's also fun. Our last question, very sad, but the wheel of fate has given us a great last question, I think.
Yeah, and the wheel actually did it. We did not pick this in any way.
And yeah, we didn't cheat in any way. So our last question is, what is your hope for the British royal family and royal watching in 2025? To be honest, I didn't really have many hopes for the British royal family. And that doesn't, I don't mean that in like a, oh, they're hopeless. I try not to get my hopes up about anything. I'm always disappointed. If you have low expectations, then no one can ever disappoint you. I mean, is it cheesy to say I hope that everyone's healthy? Like, is that a really lame answer?
No, it's really cheesy, but that's definitely also what I was going to say. Like, yeah. I just want everyone to be healthy again.
But my hope for royal watching, I would like a full separation of the Sussexes and the British royals. And I don't mean that in terms of anything that the Sussexes or the British royals do. What I mean is from like the press and royal watchers to have a separation. So I think when there was a lot of people who came in when Harry and Meghan got married because they were interested in Meghan. They were not interested in the royals. They were never interested in the royals at any point. And that's fine. Like if you, lots of us joined because of a particular person and that's absolutely fine. But once the Sussexes left, I would have liked them to go, okay, well, I was never interested in royals before, so I'm going to not be interested in royals again because they've left. They're not royals. They're their own separate people. I'm interested in them as celebrities and I will follow them as celebrities, but I don't have any interest in the British royal family. And I think the same is true from the other side. I think there are a lot of royal fans who, even though the Sussexes have left, they do not have any public funding. They are not members, working members of the royal family. They are not, they don't live in the same country anymore, still continue to harp on about them constantly. I would just like to see the press be able to talk about what the royals are doing without having to mention Harry and Meghan, and talk about what Harry and Meghan are doing without having to mention the royals. And I would like people to focus on the things that they like. Like I like talking about royals, so I will continue to talk about royals. And if you are a fan of the Sussexes, that's fine. Be a fan of the Sussexes. So I would like to have just a year where Meghan can do things or Kate can do things and nobody mentions the other one in the press at all. That would be great.
I like that. Yeah, I think there's still so many people who are like, go out of their way to find out what people they don't particularly care about are doing.
Yeah.
And then it's very annoying, quite frankly. My hope for world watching in 2025 is that there's more of it, because that's not quite what I mean, but there's more people who are engaged in it.
That was my other one that was a bit nicer.
Yeah, it's much more than it was, I think, like we said last week, the kind of the 2020 and COVID and people getting growing up and having children and all of that has diminished the numbers of the royal watching world significantly. But even within that, I think there are lots of people who are, and I don't mean this in a bad way when I say passive, but I mean they are there to enjoy it and see the pretty pictures. It feels like the kind of breadth of royal watching has really shrunk mm-hmm. to Britain predominantly, and like mm-hmm. a few sort of key figures elsewhere. So I'd like there to be people. There are a few people who are sort of popping up. Who are like, yeah, I'm really interested in this one minor royal. I'm like, don't care about them, but I will take it because
yeah,
it's something different and new, and you have this knowledge that I want to know. I've muted in a weird way so many people because all of the Ask the Answer are like, what do you think about this controversy, or don't you think they should have done this instead, or what about this awful thing? And I'm like, I don't mind people, you know, raising issues. I'm like, I follow people that I disagree with on several things because I don't want to live in a bubble, but I get annoyed when, like, the entire purpose of a blog seems to be there to sort of talk about how bad things are. I think we should do more talking about the things that have happened and less about the things that we think should have happened instead.
I know that the fandom was never perfect, but back in sort of 2014 to 2018, 2019, it did feel like a community. People aren't as interested in having discussions about things and learning about things and how all this stuff works. I imagine things like Margrethe's abdication and how fun that would have been, because we would have all been watching it at the same time. We would have been live blogging it. We would have been talking to each other. We used to have, you know, challenges. So I did a Swedish Royal Family challenge where you would post an edit or a picture every day for, like, you know, your favorite grandchild of King Hogestep, or your favorite mother and child relationship, your favorite tiara. Or, like, we had Secret Santa and a secret admirer program where you could link up with people and you sent them anonymous messages and then revealed yourself on, like, Christmas Day or Valentine's Day. And I met so many of my friends through doing that. It felt like people put more energy and effort into it. And I understand, because I'm old and, you know, low energy, you know, I get it. But it did feel like it was just more vibrant, and there was more diversity in what people were interested in. And there was a place for people who wanted to learn about things and ask questions, as much as there was a space for people who just wanted to look at the pretty pictures.
I really miss the challenges. Like, I really love, I do make them for myself now. I'm like, okay, so I'm going to do a challenge where I post every bag Kate's ever worn. Yay!
I, you know, sometimes I think about, like, oh, I should do something like this. I should reintroduce, like, a secret admirer thing, or like a Royal Fandom Awards like we used to have, or something like that. There's a certain sense of defeatism with me at the moment where I'm like, well, I could do all of these things and try and reinvigorate it, but it's not going to work out. So why bother?
In a way, I'm hoping that, like, the boringness will bring people back into it, because there's nothing happening, so people are going to have to start talking to get, you know, asking questions.
I mean, at least we've got this podcast where people do ask us questions and we have the chance to talk about things. I think if I didn't have this, I'd be like, nobody wants to hear what I have to say. I would have to start sending myself anonymous messages. Well, we ended on quite a bleak note there.
Nothing's good anymore.
Let's just use this as a call out. Anybody who listens to us on Tumblr and is like, oh, I don't want to send them that question because I bet they can't be bothered to answer it. I know that I give off an energy of, like, I don't want your questions, leave me alone. But actually, I do like talking about things. It's just that I have a weird brain and I express myself in a way that sounds really harsh, when actually I'm like, no, I'm just trying to say the facts.
Yes, come join us.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you for joining us for our 101st episode, which is definitely a real celebration that we didn't just make up. We hope that you enjoyed it. We are now going to take a few weeks off because we've actually been recording for a lot longer than we normally would without a break. But I think we both really wanted to get to the 100th episode and didn't want to stop it.
You're on a mission.
We're on a mission to get to 100. So we're going to take a much needed break, probably for a couple of weeks, but we'll let you know on our Instagram or at Tumblr and things when we're going to be back. But in the meantime, please do go and listen back to some of our previous episodes, write us a review. But other than that, it is a goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.